Sometimes they frolic en masse through Little Five Points, or once a year you might see them picnicking at Oakland Cemetery or stomping through Dragon Con. Yes, I am talking about the steampunks, a vibrant culture donning Victorian-era clothing mixed with elements of sci-fi and fantasy. The steampunk genre gets its name from 19th century steam-powered machinery. And now, Atlanta-based movie maker and steampunk enthusiast Dave DiPietro is raising funds to make a steampunk movie. The movie will take place in the same universe as his web series, Archangel from the Winter's End Chronicles. The Archangel is a crime-fighting vigilante in 1890s steampunk London. DiPietro joined producer Gabby Watts for our weekly segment 24 FPS, where we take a look at independent filmmakers in Atlanta.
It has been almost 2 years since the fight for freedom began against the worldwide vermin known as the Legion. Battles rage around the globe as men begin to realize there is always hope, as long as one heart still beats. No city has been more reclaimed from this disease than London. The resistance is growing, the enemy is frightened, and nothing scares them more than knowing that he will not rest until every last one of them lies dead. For he is the Archangel.
Our series takes place in 1893 London. However, it's an alternate universe. It's a steampunk universe. Steampunk is Victorian science fiction. A lot of people know Victorian science fiction through the works of people like H.G. Wells and also Jules Verne. They wrote about fantastic flying machines, rockets to take you to the moon, and other things that really we have today. However, they thought about it about 150 years ago. Because it's an alternate universe, we can have people from both history and literature combined in our series. So you might in an episode see Ulysses S. Grant, if it's in the United States. However, you might also see Sherlock Holmes, who's a fictional character. So this blend just gives us such a wide range of stories and adventures to tell.
So in the two episodes that you've done, who are some of the characters that appear?
Well, we have our own cast of characters appearing naturally. Our main character, his name is Brendan Winter. He was an ex-SIS officer for Queen Victoria. The SIS was actually started by Queen Victoria in reality, and it's Her Majesty's Secret Intelligence Service. That's what that stands for. So just think of him sort of as a James Bond. His last mission was a mysterious mission. He was supposed to board a train and kill this very important person on board the train. When he arrives, he gets his gun, he goes to kill this person, and in reality, the person he's to kill is Queen Victoria herself. He stops, and then suddenly someone else kills the queen. Basically, it's a setup. And during this scuffle, he has a fight, he gets shot, he fakes his own death, and goes undercover, and no longer is Brendan Winter. He takes on the guise of a London doctor by the name of Heywood Atkinson. And he then begins the resistance. And then his alternate superhero guise would be the Archangel. I've always loved, I guess, the steampunk genre. You know, with my age, I grew up with things like the Wild Wild West and movies such as 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and have always fallen in love with that Victoriana type of design and look. And I just thought, what a fantastic way of telling a story than to put it in that era and My background was from Paramount Pictures. I was with Paramount Pictures for 13 and a half years, then went over to Museum Replicas back in 2002. We produce a large line of steampunk clothing and accessory items, and the whole series was based upon us just doing a small little ad promoting our goods. One of the things that I do is kind of offbeat promotions. And rather than just do a simple video saying, wow, we have some phenomenal steampunk merchandise here that everybody would love, I thought, why not create some characters? Why not create a world? Why not to show the people how beautiful these pieces look in this world? So just put some things together. Since I've been movie making and doing television commercials for umpteen years, I started putting the story together. And any good writer would tell you that once you start developing characters, the story almost writes itself.
So sort of you made a universe and then you made the characters and then the story came into being.
Right. The universe is there. Characters, you know, you start with a premise such as he will be a Victorian superhero of some sort. No superpowers or anything like Superman. More like Batman, where he utilizes his armor and things of that nature to fight crime. But he has started a resistance, and the resistance is based in St. Pancras Cemetery. He utilizes one of the mausoleums there as a secret elevator, which takes him underground the cemetery, which we have built an extensive steampunk laboratory set where all his resistance fighters meet and plan their adventures from there.
So within your steampunk universe, do you have anything interesting, unique, different compared to the traditional steampunk? Or I don't know if there is a traditional steampunk universe.
Yeah, well, traditional steampunk does consist of a lot of like dirigibles and balloons. But I thought, well, if you know anything about them, they move kind of slow. So I didn't want that. So we took ours to that next level where we have these large steam engines actually levitating these large skyships. So in that sense, ours is a little different. Part of the other thing is you try to be true to the time period. So you have to have people with accents. But luckily for us, because of the advent of skyships, you can have Americans in London. You can have Germans in London. You can have different ethnicities throughout London, which is kind of interesting that way.
So you're starting an Indiegogo campaign to develop this into a full feature film. But once you have that funding, what will be the steps to create a whole feature film with this universe and these characters?
Well, we're blessed in the sense that we do have a number of sets already constructed because of the episodes. However, we are also equally as blessed that there has been a number of productions in and around Atlanta, some very, very big productions that have ceased production, and we have acquired many of their sets, which is a very big jumping off starting point. We acquired this gigantic cave set that has been used on some major television series. So that itself just adds to the production value and a great, again, starting point. We had developed a scene where we needed to show Victorian London, a large marketplace. So we had gone to downtown Atlanta to Pullman Yards. And Pullman Yards is where they used to put the old Pullman train cars together back in the day. And I believe the factory closed in the 80s and subsequently has just gone into disrepair. But the disrepair has actually helped the film industry here quite a lot because it does bring about either a Mad Max kind of look or a Victorian type of London look because of the architecture.
Well, yeah, I was interested in that scene because you were able to shoot it with fewer people than it looks like that are there. And then you're also able to manipulate the space to look sort of different and more compact than what it actually is like. So what are some shooting techniques, camera techniques, where you're able to make something look more crowded, more condensed, more packed, and sort of close the space a little bit?
I guess we did the London scene. Still, we had, I guess, that day on set, we had close to 80 people. However, a lot of that was crew as well. What we did was we set up certain camera angles. My director of photography has set up a beautiful crane shot primarily as an opening shot. And the way we did it was we just kind of kept it to a certain area, utilizing this beautiful antique automobile along with a number of horses. And it was just really getting those people to be choreographed in such a way that they're walking in front of the camera, behind the camera, around the camera. And it really does give the illusion that, wow, we're in a very busy marketplace during the morning hours of London.
I imagine in shooting anything, there are many unexpected problems and challenges that you encounter. So what were some of the biggest trials when shooting these two episodes?
Probably the biggest, craziest thing that went down during, it was during episode two, and it was during the Pullman Yard sequence, which was the London sequence. We had 3 days, one half day to set everything in motion, an evening shoot, and then 2 days there, which would be daytime shoots. That would comprise the 3 days. Well, the weather said some light drizzle. What the weather did not say, we were getting almost 35 mile an hour winds that day. So that night, the temperature had actually dropped. We shot that in March, and during the day, it was around 72 degrees. Well, it dropped to about 30 degrees at night. We were not prepared, you know, clothing-wise, not to mention the high winds. So we lost probably about 25% of the set blowing down the street into MARTA. So everything, all the fruit and the vegetables and the baskets were either tacked down, nailed down, or taped down, so nothing could possibly move. It actually helped the scene, however, because as the large airships come in for an attack, the Sky Raiders come in to devastate the city, it gives the illusion that their jet engines underneath their vehicles are blowing the soot and blowing the street dust up in the scene. In actuality, that was just Mother Nature.